The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 Truck Stop at Exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 Kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and, of course, the Super Truck Showroom stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. Iowa 80.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when and where you choose. So I'm just reading from ex-CNN anchor Chris Cuomo.
Yeah.
Here's a headline, says, "Firing consumed him. I was going to kill everybody, including myself." He appeared, wow. He appeared on the Mooch's podcast.
Oh. Okay.
Scaramucci is a podcast? I guess I'll have to check it out.
All right.
Just for entertainment purposes only. He spoke about his inner turmoil he felt after he was blank canned by CNN. S word.
Yeah.
Canned. You've got to make, I'm trying to figure out where he's going here. You've got to make things happen. There is no luck. There is no fate. There is no destiny. Wow. Write those down. Those are lyrics to my next heavy metal song.
Yeah.
There is no luck. There is no fate. There is no destiny. What happens is what you make happen and how you deal with what is made to happen to you for better or worse. And you know I made a lot of mistakes, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for bad reasons. I'm very flawed. There's damage. There's damage that's relatable to people. There's damage that's unrelatable to people that I have to deal with, that I try to deal with, that I do the work on. I still fail. Okay? I have learned to accept that. I had to accept that because I was going to kill everybody, including myself. Things can consume you. Italians are so passionate. Well, might as well bring identity politics into it. And I really had to fight against that because, you know, just like you did, I got too many people that count on me.
I'm sorry. Is he saying that people counted on the Mooch?
Yes.
Yes, that's
okay.
And then he talked about his kids, and he told his, he said, "Don't be me. Learn from me. I'll always love you. I love you. Doesn't matter what you do. I'm here. I'm going to get angry. I'm going to screw up. I'm going to make mistakes. And don't idolize me because I'm no idol. I'm just someone to learn from for better or worse." You know, it gets into the point of just,
I'm not sure what I'm learning.
Well, here's what you say. I was, you know, I screwed up. I'm supposed to be a journalist.
Yeah.
And I was helping my brother, and you can't do that. I was not. I claimed that I was a journalist. I was not. I was wrong for that. I made the mistake. I was wrong.
Yeah.
That's what, because that's what happened.
Yes.
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. And in, you know, the other allegations with coworkers or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean,
right,
those are things that, but in terms of what was going on at CNN, it was pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, he He was advising his brother while claiming he was not.
Well, here's the
You're
thing.
Fired. You can't do that if you are an anchor. Can't do that.
Well, you know, when he told his audience, hey, family first.
Yeah.
Then you're not, at that point, you're telling your audience, I'm not here to serve you.
Right.
It's all about me.
I'll lie to you. Yeah. I'll deceive you because my family is first, and you're telling your company, I don't care that you're paying me.
Now, I will say to our audience, it is about me. But whatever Gary gets accused of, I'm not going to ignore it. I'm going to spend all night, every night, covering it in detail. It's...
Well, I appreciate your journalistic integrity there.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's, you know, it's what I do. These are, you know, it was very... I looked at that moment, I thought, what am I missing? How is he not, you know, the View, as we mentioned, they have lawyers on the set to correct them on the fly. How did management at CNN not call him that night and say, you're done?
Yeah.
Oh, because it was part of the culture.
Yeah, because it was part of the culture. You know, Zucker knew what was going on. I mean, they everybody was in on it.
Yeah.
And so what he should have said is, you know, let's not go overboard on the contrition. It's very simple. You can sit there and say, I never committed sexual harassment, and that's why I'm suing them. I never harassed, or I never harassed anybody.
Right.
I was never involved in any type of improper relationship whatsoever. That's a lie from whoever's saying it. But I had no self-awareness. I screwed up. You cannot be a journalist and say you serve your family first. Right. The company is going to fire you for that. Call it a mistake, call it whatever. I was wrong, and the company was justified. If that's the reason they fired me, they were justified. As for the sexual assault, harassment, whatever the charges are, those are false.
And those are the things. If he were saying family first, and that's why I'm announcing that this is my last night on CNN.
Yeah.
Then that would have been, okay. There's been pressure for me to cover what's going on with my brother, and I'm not going to do that, and this is where I must part ways. But he didn't do that, and, you know, when he's glossing over it here on the Mooch Show, or whatever it's called, Mooch Time, whatever they call it, then what I'm listening to here is, all right, here's where I made the mistake. Not, I'm deeply flawed. I make mistakes. Yeah. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I
clear the
air.
You're
not saying anything.
Yeah, clear the air.
Here's where I made the mistake. I mean, if you're going to talk about it, talk about it. If you're not, then just don't bring it up.
It was obvious when he was doing the playful banter back and forth with his brother that it was inappropriate.
Yeah.
And this is after, especially at the fact that he refused to cover the nursing home scandal.
Right.
We said it was inappropriate. It was obvious it was inappropriate. This is something that if you're in the media, you knew immediately that what he was doing was wrong before you knew anything else about the other allegations about him, or before you actually knew, you know, what his communications were, what with his brother on the side. From the appearance itself, you knew enough, if you have had any experience in the media, that what he was doing was completely inappropriate because it was his brother. And because it was his brother, the perception was he was ignoring the nursing home scandal.
And which was of a, I think, the utmost public interest. If you think about what happened with that story and how things were handled.
The people died.
You know, the whole COVID thing wasn't over. You know, I mean, at the point where where he got let go from CNN, it still wasn't over. And that's it. It wasn't just about his brother. It was about the people who died as a result of his brother's actions. Mm-hmm. There were other accusations about his brother that were similar to the accusations against him. But that story was ignored. And he basically looked his audience in the eye and said, forget you. This isn't about you. Family first.
You know, what's really incredible is you get to that, if you get to the point where you have such arrogance to believe you can do or say anything and there's no consequences to it and right. You're in the media.
Right.
It's like, what? Don't you have a clue how it runs in the real world? And it's almost as if, you know, everybody there from Zucker on down, they were living in this fantasy world that the public, you know, the public wouldn't notice. Well, the public noticed. Everybody noticed what was going on at that point. Now, there was a lot of mocking, but the mocking was a way to express, you know, I think people's displeasure as to what was going on at CNN, you know, at that time with Cuomo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and there was no self-awareness. He seemed to have no self-awareness.
No, none.
Don't you understand?
Still doesn't, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I made mistakes. Which ones? And why were they a mistake? What is it that you think you did wrong? That's what I want to hear. And
he's working on the hurt and embarrassment of the CNN firing in therapy.
Well, again, he's putting it all under one umbrella. And again, by doing that, he's making it about him. If he got to the point that he talks about here, then there's no doubt he certainly should be in therapy on a personal level. But when you're talking about the mistakes you made and you're doing that on a broadcast that's heard by tens and tens of podcasters, the Mooch Hour, whatever it's called, then you should say, I made this mistake, and this is what I did wrong. Even if you don't approach the other things, the accusations against you, because, you know, saying those accusations are not true, then okay, then if you're going to defend yourself, that's you have the right, I guess, to do that, and we'll see where it comes out.
Yeah.
But what was done on the air and his approach with that program and stories that were related to his brother, again, the nursing home scandal being of utmost public interest.
Well,
is where, you know, you look at it and say, no, those are things that were very out there. This is not a secret as to what happened. It's not behind the scenes. It's not a matter between you and your family. It's a matter between you and the viewing public. And you are attempting to reach out to them and basically say nothing.
Well, if you're on the Minutia with Mooch podcast, the first question I was asked is say, okay, well, you've sued them. Do you believe you did anything wrong? I don't know what you're claiming you did wrong
right. Because
you have a lawsuit against the company. Mm. Are you saying that the way you interviewed your brother was wrong?
Right.
And you should have been fired for that?
Right.
Are you simply filing the lawsuit because of the sexual harassment allegations, which you say are false?
Right.
What's going on? You know, what are you exactly... Are you apologizing? What are you doing here? And if you're apologizing or if you did something wrong, what specifically are you apologizing for that you did wrong? Because I have no idea.
Right.
You know, because if you can't be specific with me, is this just a mea culpa? Because in a generic one to make your lawsuit stronger? Because here's what you said in public. Right. But I'm sure if you got into what exactly did they do or what do you think they did wrong or what did you do wrong, I can hear him say, well, I can't really discuss that because we have litigation going on.
Then don't appear on Mooch tonight.
Right.
Or the Mooch Angle or whatever it's called.
Much more with Mooch.
Much more with Mooch. That's...
By the way, I'm laughing here silently in the background. Just
the Mooch Factor. Whatever it's called, don't go there if you're not willing to talk about it. Which, you know, probably is being advised by his lawyers.
All right, here's a question for you, because I just thought about it. Because he was only there for a couple of days as a presidential spokesperson for Trump.
Right.
Who was worse, his 3 days or Karine Jean-Pierre?
Oh, Karine Jean-Pierre.
Okay, just wanted to, thought we just start a discussion on that one, because he was pretty bad for those 3 days.
Well, because
those few days
the only reason I say that is because, well, he knows when it's time to get out. 48 hours, been long enough. Time to go. I'm going to go start the Mooch Factor. Mooch today. Mooch in the mornings. Whatever it is they're calling.
Mooch in the morning. Sorry, Mooch is a weird dude. He's just weird.
Very strange.
All right, 866-90-RUD-EYE.
Tires command a lot of attention. As a top expense for drivers and a leading cause of CSA violations, any tire maintenance practice that can help extend tire life is worth consideration. Consider tire balancing, which can set you up for savings and a smoother ride before your tires touch the highway. Tire balancing and wheel alignment are different services, but both contribute to a smoother ride and should accompany tire replacements or repairs. Tire balancing corrects an uneven distribution of weight in tires and wheel assemblies, providing improved vehicle handling, increased fuel economy, and the overall lifespan of your tires. Balancing your tires also helps keep vehicle hardware like cab rivets tight and can help with the resale value of your vehicle.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So a Florida journalist was caught on a hot mic on Tuesday saying that her job is to make Florida Governor Ron DeSantis feel uncomfortable. First Coast News reporter Atea Collins was heard on a live stream telling someone at a DeSantis event in Jacksonville that her job is not about finding the truth, but about making DeSantis uncomfortable. My job is to ask the tough questions and make him uncomfortable. The reporter was later heard telling a purported media colleague that one of her managers instructed her just to run up to him after an event and just yell questions at him, seemingly to fluster DeSantis and capture shareable content. She expressed doubt that such tactics would be successful. He already doesn't like the media, Collins observed. Christina Pushaw, the rapid response director to DeSantis, later called out Collins, who she described as a journa activist.
No?
Okay. A journalist's job is to tell the truth, of course. Speaking the truth to power can make the powerful uncomfortable, but discomfort shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be revealing the truth, she explained, pushing bias-based narratives with the express goal of creating discomfort isn't journalism.
Yep.
If Collins' goal was to make DeSantis feel uncomfortable, she failed. At the press conference, she asked DeSantis about a viral video that showed empty bookshelves at one Duval County school. The video was used to advance a narrative that DeSantis' government instituted book bans. DeSantis said, that was a fake narrative. The video was not true. This is trying to create some narrative as if there hadn't this is trying to create some narrative as if that they hadn't even put the books out yet to begin with. So there's no need for all that stuff. What they're trying to do is they're trying to act like somehow, you know, we don't want books, he continued. He went on to explain, you hear people talk about felony charges. Understand, nothing we've done since I've been governor has done any of that. Now there is longstanding Florida law that prohibits an adult from giving a school child pornography. Don't we think that's inappropriate to do? That's been a law for a long time. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, DeSantis is going to get hit hard. I mean, the, as we saw yesterday already with Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
You know, the left is on her because she said that, you know, even though she is a minority and a woman and her family or parents are immigrants, that this is not a racist country. And, of course, the left, you have to say it is a racist country. And as we started off the show with, they believe that because that's how they think, because they practice identity politics. They judge people by groups. They're already bigoted from the start.
Yep.
They know they're bigoted. I believe that's what you're seeing from a lot of the elitist left. They know they're bigoted. They feel guilt.
Yeah. So they must accuse somebody right. else.
So they assume if they think that way, you think that way.
Yep.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. Do you know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at Motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6 and help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Gary McNamara and Eric Harley taking your calls. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, here we go. For the first time ever, U.S. adults will spend more time this year watching digital video on platforms such as Netflix, YouTube, TikTok, whatever, than viewing traditional television. Insider Intelligence Forecast said on Wednesday, in a historic first, the market tracker expects linear TV to account for less than half of daily viewing, dropping to under 3 hours, while average daily digital video watching climbs to 52.3%. At 3 hours and 11 minutes.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, I'm surprised overall. I'm not surprised based on my own viewing, what I watch now. And, right. and like I said, everything changed for me when a little over a year ago, I got my new TV, which is a computer TV, you know, which.
Yeah, smart TV.
Yes. Yeah. But, well, I had a smart TV before, but this is that my old smart TV was like from 2005 and smart is not what smart is today, where everything is. The menu you have are just like are so easy to use, and everything is, you know, it's just it's the software is just, you know, 1,000 years ahead of what came out from, you know, 15 years ago. So, yeah, it's great. I mean, and so it makes it so simple. But as I've mentioned on the air, I watch more YouTube on, I don't know, 50 different issues.
Yeah.
You know, and topics.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times I just start it and it goes to the next video. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Mm. And they can be different. You put it on shuffle. You don't know what you're going to get.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting what the algorithm will bring up in front of you. But also the offerings in and live streams on a number of things. And that's in what, you know, I'm looking for. You look for the live streams that are covering breaking news and everything else. And there's a ton of it that now is more of a go-to for me than live TV ever was. And it's because, well, there was an incident that happened in our area, and I knew they were going to have a press event, and they actually, one of the local channels actually sent you to, well, the landing was at their YouTube channel, and that's where they did the live streaming. Sometimes it might be on their app, but digital is, if you think about the generation right now that's in college or leaving college, going out into the world, they've really never known a time without having some digital, you know, something in front of them to basically entertain them that wasn't digital. Think about, you know, Facebook and everything else. You go back to the beginning of social media, but then YouTube was about that same time, and the rise of YouTube was pretty incredible. Netflix, I tried to explain to one of my granddaughters the other day, I said, did you know they used to mail you a DVD? I never ever wanted that service, because having grandkids, young grandkids in the home, it's like, you lose that DVD, you're just going to keep paying for it. No. There's no way to keep track of that many DVDs. So I wasn't in with the mail-out version of Netflix. And then the streaming version was, oh, no, that makes sense. And now the offerings are massive. You know, what can't you get? Well, the one thing that broadcast can't, you know, the channels can't bring you, whether it's cable or broadcast TV, is they can't, they're putting something on and hoping you're going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it brings in enough of an audience. But if you think about the way YouTube works, the number of views, I saw something the other day that was posted and it had 65 million views. First of all, the guy that has that channel, I mean, the bank for people like and creators, content creators like Mr. Beast and all of them that are out there, I mean, it is massive, on a massive scale. Millions and millions of dollars. But you think about, like, the exposure. The reason that they make the money is the exposure to advertisers. And you think, okay, 65 million. Well, my gosh, who wouldn't want, on a TV show, who wouldn't want to get 65 million in their audience? Doesn't matter if it's cumulative. As long as they have exposure eventually, the advertisers, to a large audience. And that's the way it works. What will be interesting is to see how they change the content on streaming now, and what it is that the audience, you know, as a collective wants. The woke stuff isn't working. They've already figured that out. It's not working. It turns people off.
Well, that gets back to what we were talking about earlier when you talk about the issues that the left is promoting these days, or isn't one they're winning on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we said earlier in the show that after the response of that Georgia state senator, you know, calling Clarence Thomas an Uncle Tom, and then, you know, saying that, you know, going after Nikki Haley because she said the country is not racist.
Right.
And they say it is racist. And we said it's time for the Republicans to start attacking, not playing defense, but attacking, because the Democrats for the last 20 years have been so blunt about their bigotry and their intolerance of identity politics that we judge people by groups or whatever. But when you look at the and as we stated, every other issue is hitting reality. They've got to hit that one. And then the other one is they can't sell. This is where the woke programs aren't getting the audience.
Right.
They can't sell that.
Right.
And so it's a great opportunity. This is the best opportunity I've ever seen. And part of it's bad stuff. I mean, what creates the opportunity is, for example, on economic issues, inflation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody cared about the debt. All of a sudden, we're feeling the consequences of the debt.
Right.
In inflation.
Right.
Well, this got to stop. This sucks. Well, you didn't care a year ago. Well, you actually did a year ago. You didn't care 2 years ago. I forgot how long we've been in this inflationary period. You didn't care. Nobody cared about the debt 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Hadn't affected them yet.
Right.
Yeah, it's abstract. That's down the line. Well, now everything is hitting reality, and the reality of entertainment is woke doesn't sell.
Exactly. And people don't want to be preached at. When you look for entertainment, especially the popcorn stuff, you're looking for your mind to not be engaged at that level. You know, throw me whatever it is, horror movie, action movie, comedy, whatever it is. But if when you feel like you're being preached out and, you know, that that there is something else going on, that it's not about entertaining you. This is about serving something else. Well, then go do a march. Go do a protest. If you're going to do that. This is where people – and it's not in a way where people – you know, all of a sudden, well, I'm going to write the management at Netflix like our dads might have done. You know, it's
handwritten.
It's it's buy, click. You're asking me to pay 15, 20 bucks a month now, and it's going up. You're asking me to pay more, and you're giving me stuff that I don't really care for. And some people may look at it and say, and not really – even say anything to somebody sitting next to them when they turn it off or don't watch it or their friend. They may not even, it's just that they don't engage. They don't watch it anymore. They don't subscribe. And you've got to find out why. Well, you look at the pattern and they know this. They know who's watching what. They know what you're streaming and when you're streaming it. It's how they know what to put in front of you. And so they build their algorithm based on this. And when they see on YouTube, well, you pause the video about 5 minutes in and then you went somewhere else and you never came back. The people who help creators and advise creators get that data from YouTube and they go to them and say, hey, you did a video on this and it fell flat. You had a lot of people tuning out. They didn't finish the video. They didn't complete the watching. They didn't engage. They didn't comment. And, you know, they look for a pattern as to what is going to create excitement or encourage more participation and viewership. That's how it all works. And it's measured unlike anything we have seen before. The Nielsen ratings in the past, you know, that's one thing, but you're not sampling every single TV watcher.
That's a great, you can give to the advertiser. This is the exact audience that we had last night for this particular program. What made the difference for me, as I talked about, you know, when I got my new 55-inch about a year ago, it's a great TV, and it's so incredibly simple to do it because I'm just not one to watch on a laptop. I don't know what it is when I watch it on a laptop or even on my phone. Those are things I do for necessity.
Yeah.
But when I was able to, you know, a couple of years ago, the first time, you know, cast it on, and what do they call the little thing you connected back up to your the Google generation, whatever it is.
Yeah, the dongle that goes into your
exactly, yeah, and so
that
I can
plugs into your TV,
so I could cast from my phone, you know, and I still have that hooked up where I can, you know, still cast some stuff, but really I can do it all from my remote now because the Wi-Fi is hooked up to the TV because it's on the big screen and because the menu, the software is perfect and it's so quick that made the whole it's almost seamless. In fact, my over-the-air channels go right into Wi-Fi channels.
Right,
they're on the same thing. You just go to the next, 68, and it's like, okay, it's 200, and it goes right into it, and boom, it's there. That's made all the difference in the world. And so I don't even know that I'm watching streaming content because I was just on antenna TV. Now I'm on the streaming content. And it's on the basically in the, you know, the same section.
Right. You're just you're flipping through just like you used to flip through channels.
Exactly. There is no it's seamless for someone like me. And then I just realized before we came on the show today, I just canceled the app that I was on my nephew, plays high school basketball. He's a freshman. He plays on the JV team.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Federation of State High School Associations has their own app.
Mm.
Not every single, but 90% of his games I could watch on TV. It was 11 bucks a month or $11.99.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
I get to watch my nephew play. I get to watch my great nephew, play basketball.
Yeah.
And there's no play-by-play or anything. It's just a camera. It's a camera, but it's going back and forth. And
next best thing to be in there.
They'll zoom in. It's like, it's like I'm there watching the game and I'm screaming at it. And he had his last game 2 days ago. And so it was right before I came on the air today, I went, oh, I don't need it anymore.
Right.
And so I canceled and they said, we hope to see you next season.
Right. Yeah.
And it's well, if he decides to play football, I may see you in September.
Right.
Because they carry, 400 different school districts across the country. And you sit there and you go, this is really amazing.
Yeah.
And the quality is really good. You know, the quality, it's funny because you and I were talking about the new S23 coming out from Samsung.
Yeah. Tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw on YouTube, somebody took the 8K picture out of it. And it was somebody in Europe.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is the phone. I mean, just the quality, which the point I'm trying to make is anybody who's an amateur now can do stuff with software on their laptop.
Right.
Or maybe their software on their phone and can make a program that is as close to being as professional, or it has those professional expectations that you want.
Right,
and you forget, I'm watching amateurs.
Yeah. Well, even investing, several thousand into some of the camera makers like Canon that have accelerated, greatly their digital camera offerings for stuff like that. Now, are you going to take that on the kayak? Probably not. but GoPro and all these other things where, you can get, if you have the even nominal skills, you can capture all kinds of B-roll type footage and put that on your... That's what people... It's what I look for. If you're going to be set up in Alaska, man, I want to see some of the scenery. Put your drone out there for me. One guy that I follow, he's in Hawaii right now. He's traveling, but he's in Hawaii right now. Shoot some B-roll and do the voiceover for that or just some music or whatever. And that's going to be, again, people's kind of their window to the world. And that's the attractive stuff that really brings in, I think, long-term, the viewers.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Shop at Iowa80.com for the best selection of everything for your truck. Bumpers, fenders, toolboxes.
It's Red Eye Radio. Important Democrat says Biden has to say something about China. Coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Download our app today, our Red Eye Radio app. Listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. All right, I was going to talk about something else, and I realized we completely forgot about this.
Yeah.
Raquel Welch.
Oh, man.
Died yesterday.
Yeah. I read the word in one of the headlines and news alerts. I read the words sex symbol, and I don't think I've seen those words anywhere in 30 years?
Are you allowed to even use those words anymore?
That's what I thought. I thought, well, somebody's going to have to be corrected on that. You know, but it was, those words were thrown around, you know, all the time back then. You know? And, yeah, really sad.
Yeah, when I saw that yesterday, I went, I'm old.
Yeah.
That was the first thing. It's not all about me, but when you see something like that, you're like, well, no, that can't happen. How, 82? What? Because it's just, you know, when.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the 60s and 70s and
right,
you know, she was a sex symbol. She had I was trying to come up with some other type of word, and I couldn't do it. Thank you for filling. I'm like, I was trying to come up with something that would be funny but brilliant, and I couldn't. Yeah. She was a sex symbol.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, if you're gonna describe her, that's how you describe her back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here she is. The world's sex symbol. I thought that not only does it sound dated, it just sounds weird to say it.
Yeah. I mean, and for me, I mean, I was 11 years old when 1 million years BC came out.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever saw the movie.
And you remember when dinosaurs were around.
Exactly right. But I remember the trailers, and I remember the posters and everything. I never saw the movie, but
yeah.
Don't think I ever had any interest in it, but you saw it. I mean, you knew about it. She was as big a pop culture of her time, maybe not to the level of Farrah Fawcett's poster.
Yeah.
Because we were sort of entering a different age at that. I don't know what it was, but Farrah Fawcett's poster was just.
Yeah.
I mean, that was huge at that point. But it was just a shock to see it, because it's just things that you relate. You know, from your age, and you're like, oh, wow, really? Oh, you got to be kidding me. But she was in a ton of movies, though. She really was.
Yeah. You know, it's, you think about, I guess, that time. I wonder if there's a documentary that's been done yet on, you know, and there were a handful of, you think of the, I don't know, this sounds weird to say, too. Pinup girls and sex symbols.
Are we getting fired for this conversation?
Well, no, I mean,
are we breaking? Yes. What rules are we breaking here?
No, I mean, you think about that. It sounds so dated.
I know.
When you say those words out loud. And certainly somebody's done the documentary on, okay, here's what it was like. Right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Who are we going to have? What are we doing? Well, we're doing a caveman movie. Well, you got to call Raquel Welch.
Well, where she was absolutely fantastic.
Mm.
And arguably her best role ever.
Yeah.
Was in the Summer of George Seinfeld episode. Remember?
Yeah.
Where wasn't he supposed to fire her? Kramer was supposed to fire her. That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I mean, that was just
wow.
And wasn't that part
97?
Of 97? Yeah, that was part of the cat fight.
Yeah.
The cat fight.
Yeah.
That was a cat fight.
Right.
Between her and Julie Louise Dreyfus.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was just, that was the whole Tony Award thing where Kramer was, you know, remember Kramer got the Tony Award?
Mm-hmm.
And they said he could keep it if he fired Raquel Welch.
Right.
The producers, we can't face her.
Wow.
So he went in and so he could keep his Tony that he hadn't earned. He had to fire Raquel Welch from the production.
She was in Naked Gun 33 and a third, The Final Insult.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, you know, if you think about that, those series of movies, Naked Gun and Airplane, and basically taking these serious role actors and actresses and putting them in these absurd comedy movies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it works. I mean, you look at Izzy Mandelbaum.
Oh, jeez. Lloyd Bridges,
yeah.
We haven't used him in a while.
He was genius in the comedic roles.
Yeah, he was. He was unbelievable as Izzy Mandelbaum in Seinfeld. I mean, he
stole that room, and that was hard to do on a Seinfeld.
Yep.
Because you had this ensemble cast, that core of those four. Then you had, of course, George's parents, and they kind of stole the room when, mm-hmm. When the episode was essentially focused on his parents, the director, the producers, the writers, they all knew it had to focus on those two,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the same with Bridges. It was, okay, look, he's going to steal the show, so everybody else is just secondary.
Well, I mean, that was the incredible thing when Raquel Welch was on. I mean, because it's like, you're just like, I remember when that I first saw that, I went, wow,
yeah,
she agreed to do this role.
Yeah.
Because remember, right, she was viewed, I mean, her image was completely and totally out of control, mm-hmm. which was really never her image.
Right, yeah.
And so they created an image that you're going to be who you are, but you're going to be this completely insane, out of control actress that nobody can control.
Right.
And so Kramer has to fight you, and then you get into a cat fight with Elaine, and she's like, "Oh yeah, I'll do it."
Yeah. Right.
She must have realized by 97, I need to be a part. I need to have this as part of my legacy.
Yeah.
So, but. Wow. Rest in peace, Raquel Welch, 82. And the thing is, I did see just one picture of her, but it was from far away. Like some magazine yesterday said mm-hmm. the last photo of her. And I went, okay, she doesn't look 82.
Yeah.
Because you just think of it. And Raquel Welch is very tough to imagine because you really haven't seen her really since that Seinfeld episode. And so that's going back 26 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had some appearances in a few movies along the way. Yeah. As late as 2017, but
yeah, I just had, yeah, I did not, I, in a I hadn't way, seen yeah. her. I mean, yeah. I, it, yeah. she wasn't, to, you know, part of the, my, you know, Hollywood consciousness of what was going on.
Yeah.
And so you just, to me, it's always the poster of her and the cave woman.
Yeah. No, that was an iconic.
It was.
Poster, it really was.
So, I mean, to me, yeah. I actually, and that's why I said, well, maybe that wasn't as big as Farrah Fawcett, but for that time, it was. It was huge.
Yeah. No, she definitely
and if you actually,
owned it for a while.
If you ask me my personal taste, I did like her poster better than Farrah Fawcett's.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Most of my buddies would probably disagree with me, but I like the Raquel Welch poster better.
Yeah.
And that's about all, because we may be getting into territory that is not woke here for 2023.
You can't say someone was beautiful.
And talking about the attractiveness of a woman.
You certainly can't be ugly. Somebody on the radio who people can't see and probably shouldn't see and say someone was pretty and be a male. So don't say she was pretty. She was, but you can't say it.
Can we say ravishing, voluptuous,
hot?
I don't know. You can't say that.
Oops.
You're fired.
Yeah.
You can't talk. You can talk about conservative talk radio hosts and how ugly they are. That's allowed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Coming up, we're going to talk about Shapiro. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah. Whole segment.
All right, in the news, here we go right now. Senator John Tester saying Biden must talk to the American people about China.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to the president about this. Here's the quote. But the bottom line is, I don't know what his plans are. Maybe he's waiting for additional information to come off of the balloon that was not totally recovered. But it's time. He must talk to the American people.
Hmm.
There are a lot of people that are very concerned. Freedom is privacy. Freedom of privacy is a big issue in Montana and across the country. Hey, it went across Montana.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's it. By the way, very clear. He is in campaign mode, Mr. Tester, Senator yep. Tester. One of the Democrats, they say, that could be, you know, on the brink next year, as the GOP seems to have the upper hand by the count. We don't give them the upper hand until they actually win it.
I love this one here from the American Prospect. The Chinese spy balloon is no big deal. Intelligence gathering is always going to happen between great powers.
Uh-huh.
Is that the majority of Americans?
Nope. No, it is not. Because here's the, you know, in the back of our minds, we're not sitting there thinking about all the satellites that are traveling around. We're not thinking about all the, I don't know, spies that could be on American soil. We're not thinking about a number of things. Because you can't just look up and see them. You're not aware that they are there, and there is no question as to what they're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference.
But Republicans need to get a grip. Chinese spy balloons are far from the biggest threat to the American security. Now, that would be the Biden administration. On the contrary, they might conceivably increase it. Spying is a normal fact for any of life for any country.
Uh-huh.
So just deal with it. It's no big deal at all. You're in the minority, sir, of thinking that. You do not blatantly fly any type of spy drone, whether it's balloon or whatever, over a country.
Yeah, so there are numerous source stories, one from Reuters coming over in the last hour or so. And again, it's sourced, anonymous sources saying Biden plans to give a speech today. They don't know what time. And again, these are sourced. But he's going to have to talk about it. He's going to have to talk about it.
Well, they keep saying speech, which means I bet you it's a speech. And then you make the best point, though. He needs to do it in the White House where he's sitting down, where the camera fades, because he can no longer. And if I'm a political consultant for the president, I would tell him you can no longer turn around and walk away.
Yeah, you can't have the image. Right. Even if there's nobody in the room.
Right.
You can't turn around and walk away. He needs to be sitting at the desk in the Oval Office. And I'm guessing they're going for a prime time address.
Maybe not.
You know, I mean, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. You just make the speech. But that would be an address from the Oval Office, and that you're not hearing. You're hearing the speech.
Well,
so
the question is then, all right, do you take questions? If I'm advising, the answer is no, no, and no. But guess what? There are going to be questions, and it doesn't matter where he does the speech, how long it is, how much is included, and Karine Jean-Pierre or Kirby or somebody's going to have to face the media. So after he speaks today, if he does, then expect it. And will it be before the White House press event or after? If he speaks this morning, Karine Jean-Pierre might call in sick.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Some encouraging agricultural things happening on the China front. First, China this past year bought a record $38.2 billion worth of U.S. ag products, second record year in a row.
which is really, I think, welcome news.
But the chief U.S. agricultural trade negotiator, Doug McCaleb, told a meeting of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture Wednesday that China has just done something else, less public, but still encouraging. Now, for years, the U.S. has complained about the slow speed at which China's been approving biotech crops for entry into China. However,
China actually recently announced approval of 6 new biotechnological trait crops for market access into China.
6 may not sound stupendous, but actually,
I think this is the first time in a decade that there's been a batch of 6 new farm products that they have approved through their biotech process.
In that group, 3 cotton traits, 2 alfalfa, 1 canola that were approved.
So hopefully that can be a harbinger of some things to come as well.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
If you like listening to Red Eye on Demand, we have more of Eric Harley and guests for you. Download RER's Extra
Mile. From what I've read in a number of different articles is there wasn't anything that was marked classified, but they're going through everything to see if it was classified.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so, that would mean it would have been separated from its original folder or box marked classified.
Because I was interesting the way I would read it from a liberal publication would say, no classified documents were found. Then I read another more conservative, and they said, no classified documents, no documents have been found with classified markings on them.
Right.
But they are still continuing to search through the documents to see if any have classified content. I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. The way they and you see how 2 articles are written can give you a completely different impression about what the FBI may be looking for.
Right.
It's not that and then the next thing you ask yourself is, oh, are they doing this because they found other classified documents that had no classification on them because they were notes? Or they were pages that were outside of the folder that might not have had classified stampings on it?
Well, because, you know, you look at the thing on the notes, and that goes back to his Senate years. All right. So you go in and to their special room, and you sit down. You can't make notes. You can't.
No, you can't.
Take pictures. You can't do anything. You can't take anything out of that room.
And,
but apparently you did.
And I did see that they were looking for documents that came from his Senate years. So those would have been, they may have been the ones that were handwritten notes.
Right. And if those notes contain classified information, then that would be a problem.
House is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband
and co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the low.
G-
giving you 70% each night. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, we know one of the biggest issues out there is crime, is the whole concept that Democrats have been pushing of no cash bail, of letting people out of prison because everybody's in prison because of drug charges, right?
Yep.
And for simple possession and things like that.
Right.
Well, the Bureau of Justice Statistics has come out. This is on state inmate population. And it contradicts the popular argument from criminal justice reform advocates that prisons are largely filled with nonviolent drug offenders. Data from the Bureau of Justice Statistics shows only 12.6% of state prisoners are behind bars for drug-related crimes, and only 3.2% are locked up on possession charges, while five times as many people are in state prisons for violent crimes rather than drug charges, said Zach Smith, legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation's Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies. Quote, if you listen to the people on the left, you would think that everyone who has a joint in their pocket is getting sent to prison for 20 years, which is just not the case. Prominent Democrats and Republicans across the country have pushed to decriminalize drugs by arguing in part that harsh drug laws have led to a prison population boom. AOC in the past has said the reality is the U.S. prison system is nonviolent people stopped with a dime bag. President Joe Biden has issued thousands of pardons for marijuana crimes while insisting that no one should be in a federal prison solely due to possession of marijuana. No one should be in a local jail or state prison for that reason either. You had Elizabeth Warren say the same thing. But when you actually look at the numbers out there, what you find out is that that's not the case. You have, let me see, Keith Humphreys, an American psychologist, and a couple of more professors at Stanford University told Fox News Digital those positions simply are not backed up by the data. It's been a long time talking point, particularly around cannabis legalization, to say our prisons are full of pot smokers and nonviolent drug offenders. It's just something that has never been true, certainly for cannabis. You can get a night in jail still for cannabis, but going to prison is pretty much impossible anymore. Not that it was ever really possible. Humphrey said that at the height of the crack cocaine explosion in the 1980s, only about one in five state prisoners were incarcerated for a drug charge of some form. Humphreys explained that violent crime is driving prison population in the United States, as evidenced by the data showing 62.4% of state prisoners are serving sentences for violent crime. The other 40% includes people who previously committed violent crimes or pleaded down from a violent offense to a lesser offense. Smith agreed, saying people with simple possession charges, especially first-time offenders, probably pled down to those charges from a more serious charge. For instance, a lot of time if someone is potentially facing possession with the intent to distribute, which carries much higher penalties, the prosecutor might plead down to simple possession in that case. So most of the time, I suspect if someone is in jail for just possession, it's because it was knocked down that they were actually distributing, but they dropped that charge,
right,
in order to get them to plead and not go to court.
Right.
Smith also echoed the conclusion that prison populations are driven by violent crime and not low-level drug offenders, not just in recent years, but historically.
Between 1960 and 1990, the rate of violent crime in the United States surged by over 35%. It was the biggest increase in our country's history. And so it's that increase in violent crime that was the increase in incarceration, and the increasing of incarceration rates. It's not minor drug offenses or really drug offenses, period. Smith said there were 43 million drug arrests, in the United States between 1980 and 2012, which sounds like a lot until you consider that there were a total of 443 million total arrests during that same time frame, which he says shows that drug arrests accounted for less than 10% of all arrests over that roughly 32-year period, which runs contrary to reform narrative. Even if you go all the way back to 1997, the heart of the tough-on-crime era, if you will, only 1% of prisoners were in prison for a first or second time nonviolent drug offense. And only 4% of state prisoners in 1997 were considered to be drug kingpins, said Smith, who was authoring an upcoming book titled Rogue Prosecutors, about the progressive prosecutors across the country implementing what they call criminal justice reform. Well, that's important to know those stats.
No, it is. And because, again, and I would love to take a look at the cases that had a plea bargain where they dropped the charge down. How many drug dealers and are being used basically as poster children for this entire thing? Because that's not a small thing. You could ask the average person, hey, should they be behind bars for simple drug or just marijuana charges? Well, no, they shouldn't be. Well, should they be behind bars if they're a drug dealer? Yeah, they should be. And, you know, there's the difference. I understand wanting to clear the docket, save the taxpayer money and everything else, but if we're going to be honest about all of this as to why people are there and the reasons why they're there and why the left wants them, essentially, prisons to be gone. I mean, that's what the far left is saying right now. We should have no prisons. Now, Elizabeth Warren did clarify that billionaires should be in prison for having money. But anyone that just, had a drug charge should not be.
They said, and those who decry how the U.S. justice system treats drug offenders also ignores the disturbingly tight relationship between drug offending and other often violent offending.
Mm-hmm.
Myers told Fox News Digital an earlier Bureau of Justice survey found 22.4% of drug offenders in state prison were also violent criminals and 26.4% had 3 to 5 prior sentences. Mm. Over 13% of sentenced drug offenders had 6 to 10 prior sentences.
Interesting.
Myers also pointed out to the survey that found 38.4% of state drug possession offenders were rearrested within a year of release. By year 5, that percentage grew to a 73% rearrest rate.
Hmm.
Of all state drug offenders, 28% of those released in 2012 were rearrested for a violent offense within 5 years. Released drug offenders were more likely to be arrested again within 5 years for a violent offense more than those released for homicide or rape.
Hmm.
Wow. Hmm. I'll say that again. Released drug offenders were more likely to be arrested again within 5 years for a violent offense more than those released for homicide or rape.
Wow.
Those are interesting stats.
Yeah.
Because, that's what it's been thrown out there for the longest time. It's been thrown out there for 30 years. Well, our prisons are just filled with people that, you know, are there for simple drug possession.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the point he's trying to make is that's not the case now, but that also wasn't the case, these researchers are saying, 30 years ago.
Right. Well, you know, the left has moved so far away from, and, you know, many people have moved away from the whole tough on crime thing. But honestly, if you sit down and ask people and give them real information, actual information, our society does not want violent people on the streets. They don't want drug dealers on the streets. Those are the answers you'll get. But the left will tell you, again, our prisons are filled with nonviolent drug offenders.
Well, you know, immediately the president came out not even knowing what had happened at Michigan mm-hmm. State University the mm-hmm. other night mm-hmm. and said all assault weapons should be banned. And then it yeah. came out, and I don't know the exact details on it, mm-hmm. but it's like, wait a minute. This guy had a felony charge for mm-hmm. possession of a gun
right.
illegally, and they dropped it from a felony,
mm-hmm.
apparently what, to a misdemeanor, and he was out.
Right.
And the point is, are we releasing violent criminals? Or, again, illegal gun possession is supposed to be a serious crime.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Well, but think about the DA in New York. If you don't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And otherwise you're not committing a felony, we're not going to go after you.
Yeah. Ask the majority of Americans if it should be a felony. You go into a store, you pull a gun, you point it at people and say, you give me your money or I'll kill you.
Right.
And they don't pull the trigger and they walk out.
Right.
If they believe that you should be able to just get a misdemeanor or whether that should be a felony.
Right.
I guarantee probably 99.9% of people will say that's a felony, even the most liberal people, especially if they're a victim of that, as we found out from the congresswoman the other day.
Right. That's a violent individual if they're willing to pull a gun
yeah.
in a store. If they pull the trigger or not, they're a violent individual and they need to be behind bars for a long time.
And so if you wonder why New York City is messed up, look who the Manhattan DA is
right.
and what he actually said.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
They don't care about the safety and security mm-hmm. of civilians.
Right. No, they don't.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, we saw how the left was attacking Nikki Haley yesterday. Mm-hmm. You and I had talked about that, and
mm-hmm.
you know the fact that you know she said the United States is not a racist society, it's not a racist country, and they went crazy because, of course, they believe it is because they believe in identity politics, which is judging people by groups and not individuals, so they're bigots already. So
yeah,
that's
right.
why. So of course. That's the way they think. So of course they view the nation as racist. But the attack on DeSantis yesterday that I saw on Twitter was the best.
Hmm.
It shows DeSantis sitting there, and he's got his you can see his boots, and the heels look a little larger, and it says DeSantis heightens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, no, that's something that's been going on even from Trump supporters. They've been doing the same thing, too.
Yeah, well, I believe it was a Trump supporter who did it because that was a back and forth.
Yeah.
You're a Trump supporter. Yeah, and you don't need somebody fake like him.
Yeah.
We're against
right.
fake news and we're against fake height. And so the mocking was
right.
just
yeah.
unbelievable. I mean,
right.
it was just like it was a zoo. And,
yeah. No, I mean, you know, that's going to be part of it.
That's not going to be effective against DeSantis.
It isn't. It's going to get down to the issues. The name calling isn't going to work this time. It just isn't for anybody. The left is going to have a problem. You know, again, when people on the right are saying, look, you know, we're not a racist nation, and they're screaming at the top of their lungs and crying, no, we're so racist. Man, I was reading a thread the other day, and it was a comment, a tweet by Richard Engel, and it had to do with the recent mass shooting. And he said, you know, my friends abroad wonder how this keeps happening. You know, the one at Michigan State University, and how this keeps happening. It's almost like we allow it, and, you know, and everything else. And then the comments, you know, he says, the ending on his tweet was, you know, we're such a great nation. And then everybody in the tweet, well, we're not a great nation. I thought, wow. Wow. Exactly. There it is.
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.